This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's December 6th, 2017. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week with my co-host, Fran Storch.
Hi.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can either call or text 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or if you're listening to us on a podcast, you can also send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. If you want to listen to past episodes, whus.org or on iTunes. So I'm going to start out with Ron's Rant of the Week, and my Rant of the Week is very simply, dog barking in the background, very simply, okay, Ron's Rant of the Week is ride your bike and following the rules of the road. Why am I saying this? Why do I always say this? Because it seems that every time I go online and poke around about things that people are most complaining about, it's the motorists that complain so much about the riders who do not follow the rules of the road. And so as I hear these different complaints from motorists, it just seems that the common factor just always comes to light. Hey folks, you ride a bike, stop at the stop sign, stop at the red light, use your hand signals, communicate with the drivers. Please, please, come on. We don't get respect until we give respect. So that's my rant of the week, and there is a comment on Facebook about it. Someone talked a little bit about our buddy Tony in Hartford, talked about the Idaho stop, which is where you can actually roll through an intersection. I think it's a good idea, too. We'll talk more about that later. You can have additional discussion on this on Facebook. On a positive side, okay, on the positive side, the League of American Bicyclists has just announced that Mansfield, yes, our little town of Mansfield, has joined the 500-plus communities in the U.S. designated as a bicycle-friendly town by the League of American Bicycles. So we are now a Browns-level bicycle-friendly town, and for the next 4 years, and so anyway, we're going to have a presentation coming up next Monday evening at the town council meeting, which is very nice. So big tip of the cycling cap to the town of Mansfield and Lon Holkeren and his crew for making this happen. It's really, really good. Last item on my agenda here before we get to a guest, because we have a guest waiting for us, is the Maintenance Minute. So I decided to go over a very, very simple one since it is becoming winter where we are right now. So storing your bicycle for the winter is what I am going to put into the maintenance minute. Remember, there's just a few things you can go down the list of. I will post this on Facebook afterwards so you can go back and check it out. But you inflate the tires on your bike. Make sure they're up to full inflation. Wipe down the frame. Inspect your frame. Look for cracks. Look for any little discrepancies within the frame, which may be causing you a problem in the future. And winter's a good time to get that fixed. Lubricate your exposed cables. So if you have an exposed cable, one that's just out and outside of a casing, just put a little oil on there, and it'll keep it from rusting in the wintertime. Wipe down your tires, your saddles, and your hand grips or tape. Just clean them up so they don't mold on you over the wintertime, depending on where you're going to be storing that bicycle. Hopefully you don't store your bike, just ride it all winter, but that doesn't always work that way. Inspect your tires, your wheels, your brakes, and your brake pads. Clean your chain and re-lube the chain so it's got a nice fresh coat of lube on it to hang with over the wintertime. Empty your water bottles and your hydration packs. Yeah, I know people who do this. They'll leave something nasty in their bottles or their hydration packs, and it just becomes a science project, so you really want to make sure that is taken care of too. If you use a garage, hang your bicycle so the tires are not touching concrete. So those are my tips for you on the Maintenance Minute for storing your bike for the winter. If you have any additionals, please contact me with it. You can write me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. So I have a guest today, and this is very, very exciting because we have a special guest. Our guest is Celine Yeager. She's a top-selling author and professional health and fitness writer who lives what she writes as a certified personal trainer, professional mountain bike racer, and triathlete. She has co-authored and authored and contributed to more than a dozen books. She is a frequent contributor to Runner's World, Women's Health, and Shape magazines, and dishes out training advice monthly as Bicycling Magazine's Fit Chick. And she lives in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. So I welcome to the show the Fit Chick from Bicycling Magazine, Celine Yeager.
Woohoo!
Hey,
hey, there you are. So anyway, this is really a cool thing. It's an honor to have you here. I often on the show am quoting different things from Bicycling Magazine because it's just a wealth of knowledge, and you are also a wealth of knowledge contributing to it. So it's just really cool to have you here, and it's cool to have somebody who has as much knowledge as you do about the health and fitness end of the bicycle thing. But on the other hand, we also need to know a little bit more about you. So I ask this question to all of my guests, and the question is, what is your very first memory of being on a bicycle?
My very first memory is honestly on a tricycle in my parents' front yard. Like, I very much remember, I used to just pedal my little tricycle. They had a series of sidewalks that went through our yard, and I would just rain, whatever, kind of like today, really, be out, like, pedaling, seeing what I could see.
Yeah.
That's my first memory. I've always ridden. I've always really liked to ride.
Yeah. Well, it gives you a sense of freedom. There's something really special about the bicycle, and that's something that I feel, and most everybody else that rides a bike that I know of feel the same way. So that's a cool thing. So fill me in. Like, obviously, I read a little bio here on you to see the different things that you're doing here. So give me your idea of what it is that you're doing right now, like with Bicycling Magazine and other things. So just give us a little information, please.
You mean professionally or on my bike?
Yeah, professionally. We'll get to the bike. The bike comes next.
Okay.
No problem.
Yeah, I contribute a lot of service, what we call in the business, service content, which is just a fancy way of saying, you know, training, nutrition, sort of all that, like, how-to advice for Bicycling Magazine. I've done it for a very long time. You find me mostly on bicycling.com, because that's the best way to just punch out a lot of information, and it gets shared very easily and rapidly. I am a coach and a trainer, an athlete myself. So, and I have, at this point, have made a billion contacts throughout the industry, you know, nutritionists and trainers and coaches and other athletes. So it's just, I really enjoy it. I really enjoy, like, very sincerely, everything I write, I try to think, what can I learn myself, like, this time? You know, so if I'm learning something every time I write something, then I know my audience is.
Right. So you've authored a number of books, and what drew you to that idea? I mean, from riding a bicycle to that.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I've always, just as I've always ridden a bike, I've always wanted to be a writer. I remember seeing bylines and magazines and books, like, as a young, maybe middle school, and thinking, wow, I'd really like to do that. And teachers would always write on my papers, like, maybe you'll be a writer someday, you have a way with words. So it seems to be just something that's in my DNA. So when I got out of school, I was actually a medical writer. I went to school thinking I might go pre-med, and then I didn't. I decided I didn't want to do that much school.
It's a lot of school.
It's a lot of school. So
it's a lot of school.
I liked writing. A lot of school. So I ended up writing for medical publications. But, you know, writing for things like infectious diseases in children is not exciting and kind of a downer sometimes. So I wanted to get into, like, I wanted to get into commercial, you know, like what I do now, consumer health.
Right.
And I worked my way that way. And, you know, one thing led to another. I got hired in Rodale, who does bicycling and a lot of other publications.
Mm-hmm.
They had a books division at the time, so I just ended up writing books for their books division, and it all sort of came from there. Like, it's sort of like anything else. It's putting together a book is a special skill, you know, and there's a little bit of an art and a science to it. But once you know how to do it, you can organize a lot of things into a book. You know, it's just like a fun project for me.
That's great. That's great. So when did you first get bit by the bicycle bug? I mean, I know about the tricycle. Okay, we got that part.
Yeah.
But there had to be something beyond that got you to a point where you just went, you know, this is the way I want to spend my life. And when did that happen?
There's probably two pinnacle moments in there. You know, like when I was, the first isn't as pinnacle, but just more indicative of where things were going. Because when I was in high school, even, you know, I could drive, but I would still opt to ride my bike 20 miles to the lake to meet my friends because I just really loved it. I did a research paper on my bike. I did a lot of things. Like, so I really just really loved my bicycle, even at like 16, 17. And then I went to college, but I didn't know that people did anything other than like ride a bike because it was there. I didn't know anybody raced bikes. My parents weren't aware of the Tour de France. You know, like it just wasn't in my, it wasn't in my ether growing up. So when I went to school, I kind of fell away from the bike. It was kind of a pain to have it. And I just ran and I taught aerobics and all this stuff that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got out of college and I bought a bike again because I missed it. And when I got hired at Rodale, which is the bicycling mothership, if you will, I was out on this very crappy bike that I had bought when I was living in Philadelphia. It was just a very plunky hybrid, and they had lunch rides at bicycling every day. And they're like, oh, you should come. And, you know, they're all on their bikes, which are not what I was riding.
Right.
But I was able to keep up with them, and they were like, you should consider this sport. I was like, what do you mean? I am. I'm riding this bike.
Right.
You know, they're like, no, you should.
Yeah, but there's another world.
I was kind of irritated by that. I was kind of insulted. Like, what are you doing? You know, but then they sort of took me by the hand, and we got my first road bike, and then my first mountain bike. And
here, let's take you to Manayunk.
We should consider racing. Yeah, to go up the hill. And I'm like, racing? I'm not a racer. I don't want to do that. And then I entered my first race and I won. And then I was like, you know what? Oh, yeah.
That'll get you hooked.
I was just like, maybe my new friends know something I don't. It was, what a gift and what a pleasure to be able to, like, there's not much separation in my life between work and home and activity and whatever, but I think that's a gift because I really love what I do and I love all the aspects of what I do, and I'm not sitting in an office not liking what I do and sad that it's Monday, you know? So like, I feel like even though I'm kind of working all the time, I'm okay with that because it's towards something that's just in my mind, just an enormous gift.
Because you're not really working. Because you're enjoying what you're doing so much, which is the secret to supposedly having a good job.
I'm banging my head against the desk and like wondering why words won't come. I mean, let's be honest. It's not camp.
No.
But it's satisfying. Like even when it's frustrating, like I trust the process and like the words will come. You know, just keep at it, and they do. You know,
and,
they always do.
And if they don't, you can just always go out for a bike ride, and
that's
you can kind
exactly
of clear
right.
your head and go.
Get it right on the head, and then the words come.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Oh, the bicycle! I've been telling people this for years. The bicycle is the answer to all the woes of the world. It really is.
I agree.
Everyone should ride a bike, and I don't understand why they don't. But here goes Fran's sigh. I knew that was coming. I say that so much to so many people, but everyone should ride a bike.
I've never regretted a bike ride.
Yeah, it's kind of a special thing. So that's really cool. And then you got into the racing thing. Your friends at Bicycling Magazine, you know, they're very wise there. They all ride bikes, and they're all, like, really, really into it. I had a friend that I used to race with years ago who was a writer for them for a number of years, and he has since moved on. He's not doing that any longer. But, you know, they're just...
What was his name?
Scott Martin.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You know Scott Martin?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Scott and I...
I've been here an awful long time.
Yeah, I guess you have, because he was there a long time ago. And we both used to race at the same time. He would come out to my house, and I'd take him out for training rides, because we live in like a great place to ride a bike. And so he lived out in the Hartford area. I think he was still going to Trinity at the time. And he came out, and he would go for bike rides with us, and we'd, you know, wow him with all our beautiful roads. So you probably have some pretty beautiful roads down where you are, too, I'm sure.
We do. We really, really do. We're not that far from Amish country, and it's very easy to, you know, within 15 minutes, you're in pretty quiet.
Yeah.
You're in pretty quiet areas where you can, we can string together tons of unpaved roads, still, you know, dirt roads.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. So anyway, yeah, that's how I met Scott. But anyway, everybody that was there, though, even when he was there, was just really, really into riding their bikes, which is cool. So it's, you know, it's a very positive atmosphere, I'm sure. The bike racing thing, are you still racing?
Oh, yeah. I am still racing.
Yeah, and you seem to be pretty hot on the mountain bike scene right now. Is that still going on?
Yeah, I mean, that is... I'm sort of in that in-between off-season. I'm just sort of wrapping up some cyclocross stuff and whatever. But, I raced on a mountain bike-specific team for about 5 or 6 years, which took me to – it's been amazing. I mean, I raced Cape Epic in Africa and the Brazil Ride in Brazil and Israel Epic, and I was just in Cuba mountain bike stage racing last year at this time, actually. So it's been an amazing, amazing journey. I've dialed it back just a little bit because I've, you know, it takes a tremendous, tremendous amount of training to race at that level.
And yes, it does.
A lot of time. A lot of time. I just started burning out a little bit on just the travel. It's like, it's not the racing as much as all the other stuff, you know, like the travel and the getting yourself together and the logistics of it all is difficult. And I have a daughter and so I've dialed it back a little bit. I certainly have not pulled out of the whole scene. I'm still doing. I just did Dirty Kansas last year again, which is I do some of those long gravel rides too, which is like a 200-mile gravel race.
Oh yeah, the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of those lately, and those are super fun. You know, I like to do different things that keep me fresh because I'm not one of those athletes that can do the same thing season after season. I just get kind of burned out.
Right.
I need new challenges.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, I hear you. That's great. That's awesome. So you touched on something in that part of your conversation on something that is very near and dear to me since I've been involved in it for a number of years, and I am also a race promoter for a couple of these races up here in Connecticut, and I noticed that cyclocross racing is something that you participate in. What are your thoughts about cross?
Oh, it's fun. It's huge. I mean, we are... kind of like you guys were cross crazy down here. Like it's July and people are like talking about gluing the tubulars, right? And
you're
just like,
yes.
Can we stop? Like, can we just please stop? Cross is not coming yet. Stop. Yeah,
I know.
Everyone is just so. And I get it. It's I think it's such a wonderful way to get into competitive cycling for almost anybody because you don't need a team. It's you're not going to go out in the woods and get hurt or lost. You know, like,
right?
It's not scary like the road can be because you're in this pack and it's, you know, it's somewhat terrifying if you're not experienced with that.
Oh yeah.
You're just going around this grass. I mean, and you can start wherever you want. You can start in the back. You don't have to be aggressive. And people are going to cheer you on no matter what, you know, and
you're hitting on everything. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. It's just a really fun day. You can go with your whole family. Watch everybody races. It's just the whole scene is fun and the racing is fun and the courses are fun. And I just think it's, you know, and especially when it's like a little colder, maybe you don't want to go out for these long rides and it has that intensity that we had another conversation about earlier. Like it's really good for you because you're
yes.
going really hard. For
oh, yeah.
Minutes. So, yeah, you're automatically getting like all this intensity that is metabolically wonderful for you. I just think it's, there's nothing bad I can say about cyclocross. I just think it's just a really fun, really fun time. And it's just a great way. If anyone is ever considering like, oh, I wonder if I could like race on a bike. Like that's in my mind, I'd just be like to try a cyclocross race.
It's the first thing I suggest because I have a lot of people that I've been the bicycle guy forever. So, you know, people are always coming up to me and asking me about, you know, if they want to race or if they want to get involved in cycling in some way. They're always coming up and asking me for advice because I've been doing this for over 40 years. And if they come to me and say, I want to race my bike, you know, I know you know a lot about bike racing. I raced for 10 years and they will say, you know, I want to, you know, I'm thinking I want to do some road racing, and I'll go, no, I said, let's do a cross race.
Yes.
Let's do a cross race. Okay, we're going to go out and we're gonna do the cyclocross race, and you're going to fall off your bike and you're going to bump into people, and you're going to work yourself so hard that you never thought you could ever work that hard ever before. And you're going to come back next week and you're going to go, oh my God, that was so much fun. I can't wait for the next one. And that's how you get people into cross. Cross is simple. It's under an hour. It's a lot of hard effort. I had a really good running friend of mine who has now become what all old runners become. He's become a cyclist.
Right, exactly.
So he had texted me and contacted me about, you know, wanting to do the Hartford race back in September, and he was thinking of doing it, wasn't real sure. So I met him at the course the day before as I was setting everything up, took him out for a ride, showed him around. He went, oh, this is really fun. And he said, oh, you're gonna love it. He has not stopped since he started that. He's been racing almost every weekend. He's just having a blast, and he said he has a newfound love, and it's just now he's involved. And when you learn how to do that, when you learn how to ride your bike in that difficult of a situation, you're so much better on the road. You're a much better road rider, and you're ready for it. That's my feeling anyway. So
that's a good way to. I mean, I've not even thought about it as a stepping stone to the next thing, but of course it is. Yeah, because it does. Because it's a good way to get comfortable with a little contact and comfortable with a little squirreliness on the bike, and you know, all that stuff. So.
It
hurts much less when you fall.
Oh, yes, it does. Although I will say the only bones I have broken were on my cross bike, not on my road bike. Well, supposedly there's one on the road bike that I never noticed, but that came up later on. That's another story for another time. But, it's, you know, you can, it's true. The ground is much softer than the pavement is, and you tend to not be at the same speeds as you would be sliding down
the
pavement,
true,
and losing lots of skin and all that fun stuff. So, but what I love about it, and what really drew me to it, or helps me get people to be drawn to it, is the camaraderie amongst the other riders. It's like people just, they are so good to you when you're a newbie at it, and they just.
And that's not always the case on the road. I think that's gotten a little better, but
To a certain degree. But there's a reason why that is different on the road. On the road, there's more of a life threat on the road than there is off road.
100%. It's better.
And the roadies
are cheering you on.
Yeah, the roadies get a little snobby about it because they don't want to go down, and they're gonna be a little cold to you at first until they figure out whether you can ride your bike or not.
Exactly.
So. That's what I see anyway. But I love the camaraderie. Yeah. And, you know, we have, like, really festive things going on around our races. You know, one of the races we do is got a big food table. It's like having a bake sale that you don't pay for. And people just come.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, it's really cool. So that's a neat thing. And, you know, there's that my other race that I'm involved with, we have food trucks. So there's more food or food around cycling. That's interesting, isn't it?
Imagine.
So,
we have a 13-week. Night ride series. Like, it's a mile from my house. It goes through our recycling center.
Really?
It's really cool. It's really cool. Yeah, it's every Thursday night. And it's the same thing. Like, they go down, they start a little fire, there's music, there's often a food truck, there's a keg of beer, and two races. And it's super fun. It's
really cool.
Super, super fun.
Do they light it up, or do you have lights on your bike?
You have to have lights. No, everyone has like a helmet light.
Right.
Because you just wouldn't be able to see without it. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
In the beginning, when it first starts, you can usually get the first race in without your lights, and then part of the second race. But now I'm riding down to it with my light. Obviously, it's dark before 5. You know, the race starts at 6:30.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's pretty dark out. Well, that makes it that adds another dimension of interesting to the whole off-road thing, because it's like you're riding in a tunnel. So you get that experience
of
speed around you.
So
and
many people.
Mm.
When you see videos of it, it looks really cool because there's so many people on the line, and that's a lot of headlights.
That
so
is.
It's a lot of,
Wow, that's cool.
Really fun.
I like it. I like it. That sounds like a cool idea. I wonder if anybody's doing anything like that. No, they probably are up here. I'm in New England. I mean, we do everything up here as far as cross goes. So, anyway. So how much do you ride in a year?
Oh, how much do I ride in a year?
Yeah.
Everyone is always like, oh, you have to hit 10,000. And I don't think I've ever hit 10,000 because I don't ride so much.
Yeah.
You know, so like that is harder. But I often hit 8 and maybe
really?
Still hit 9.
Whoa.
But yeah, so
whoa.
Yeah. Probably 700 hours. And I mean, I only know this because I started Strava because I never actually counted that before.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somewhere between 8,000 and 9,000 miles.
Wow. Wow. Well, you said a magic thing here too. You said hours, and I love, you know, it when people tell me how many hours they rode for the year versus miles.
I think hours is more useful in so many ways, especially now that so many people are quote unquote gravel adventure, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Like you're just not holding the same speed. You're not going 15 to 20 miles an hour. You're just not. But you're out there covering, you know, you're still, the time is really what matters at that point, right? Like whether you're mountain biking or gravel riding, whatever you're doing, like how long you're out there is more meaningful than how many miles you're out there.
I agree. And, you know, I teach so much indoor cycling because of, you know, our weather issues, obviously. I'm a wimp under 40 degrees, so I just don't want to be outside as much. And I teach so much indoor cycling that by the time the rubber hits the road in the spring for me, I've got 80 hours on my legs. And, you know, and it's, you know, I call it what it is because it's time spent. So I'm not going to discount it just because it was indoors.
But, no, nor should you.
No, that's how I feel. Some of my friends don't feel the same way. They give me a hard time.
Well, there's
for
a
it.
Snobbery element to that, and that's just, you know, that is what it is. I mean, that's just our community, right? But, you know, a lot of those miles are harder. Like, I feel like, because you don't really coast when you're inside, right? So it's a different kind of training.
Like, you can't.
It's a very different kind of training.
Right.
Well, you can't. You can't. But you could just stop, I guess. But
you
it doesn't
could.
Make any sense.
Yeah. Right, but then you have all you're that not. Peer pressure of everybody that's next to you when you're doing that,
yeah,
and they're going, what are you doing?
Yeah. Like, why aren't your legs moving?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Do you do any indoor training on your bike?
I do some. I am a year-round outdoor rider, but I do.
Wow.
I actually like I like my rollers. I have those Inside Ride eMotion rollers that move. They're on a sled.
Oh,
so you can, like, stand
yeah.
up, and they're lovely. They feel a lot like the closest I've come indoors to feeling like I'm outdoors, like on a real bike, because the bike moves with you.
Right.
I have a low tolerance for, like, trainers because I don't like – I get real uncomfortable when it's locked in, you know?
Yeah.
As much as Zwift is amazing, like, I get it. I understand, like, the appeal of all that stuff. But I'm just not that comfortable on a trainer, though I think I could conceivably do some of that with the rollers that I have. But anyway, I use those, and I listen to podcasts, and then I listen to music and do some intervals. And just, it's a different kind of workout, and I approach it differently, you know, than
sure.
an outside ride. Sometimes in the worst of the worst, because I want fresh air and sunshine so badly, like sometimes I'll go out and do like an hour or an hour and a half if it's very cold outside, and then just come in and finish up on my rollers, like warm back up and finish up. And I like that kind of split. Like that kind of satisfies both needs for me sometimes during like January and February when, you know, it's too cold to be outside too long because it's so hard to stay warm, but I want something. You know, I want to feel like I've gotten some fresh air and some daylight. So
are you in the mountains where you are? Is it
Well, no, I wouldn't call it the mountains of anything in Pennsylvania, just because it's kind of like you guys. But we're in the hills. I mean,
yes.
There's nothing flat. You cannot find
it's,
flat.
It's pretty rolly where you are.
Feet for every 10 miles, it's very, very rolly.
Yeah.
It's funny because people often come from the big states like Colorado and California, and they're like, oh, you guys, and they're destroyed. They're crushed.
Sure. Like, oh, yeah.
Because it's like doing intervals. It's so much harder. Because you never settle in, right? You're always hitting a pitch. You're always going up or you're always going down.
Is it similar to here, then?
You can settle
it
into
is.
A very long mm-hmm. climb.
Yeah, it's very similar to our terrain up here in northeastern Connecticut. It just never really stops. You're either going up or down.
Yep.
And it's
yeah.
really, really
yeah.
difficult to find a long, flat road. that you can,
oh,
you know.
Oh, forget it.
So
yeah.
if you're looking for a long flat
we
road
have, like,
because you're looking for a specific training you want to do.
Yeah.
Even the state roads are not.
Everyone does the same. Everyone does the same when we want to do a quote-unquote flat ride like that. We all go out to the same loop.
Right.
You know, there's just like a very small loop where it's relatively flat.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do that. We go we up 198 and down 89 or up 89 and down 198.
Yeah.
You have to do it on the state roads because the state roads, because the ridges run north to south. And so if you want to go flattish, you're going to go between the ridges. But even 89 and 198 are not flat. They're not flat.
But we also.
Where are you in Connecticut? I have friends in Old Lyme.
Okay.
Well, the thing with Old Lyme is Old Lyme is on the shore. So if you go up and down the shoreline, it will stay flat. The minute you turn, and I'm talking the minute you turn north,
I believe you.
You're going to go over a hill.
Yeah, once you go north, you just start hitting the hills right away.
Not even, I mean, we're talking like you get off the actual shore where you can see the water and you will be, because when you do the Niantic Bay Tri, it's hilly.
Yeah.
And the swim is in the ocean, in the sound.
But it's got it has the best of both worlds down there, which is nice. It's down on the shore. That's where Jeremy Powers came from. That's where Tom...
From East Lyme.
The Lyme
Which is
area.
Nearby.
Yeah, it's right in that same area.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been some, you know, really high-level athletes that have come out of that area. But it's, we're north of there. We're about 35 miles north of there. So we're where there are nothing but hills. Yeah, we're at the University of Connecticut. That's actually where we broadcast.
That's where we are right now, this minute.
So
go Huskies.
Okay.
So if you ever want to go for a cool ride, you're more than welcome to come up. We've got a great place for you to stay, and I have Ron's rule number 5 applies here. Okay, and that would be that I will ride with you. I won't ride against you, and I expect the same from you.
I love that.
Yeah.
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 That's
yeah. Yeah.
We also have incredible rail trails around here.
That's the other luxury we have is we have a dirt rail trail.
Yeah, we have quite a few of those. Too.
That's great.
Yeah. And that's...
I do a fat bike race. I did a 120-mile fat bike race.
Nice.
On a fat bike? 120 miles on a fat bike?
Wow.
Shattered. Wow. I was shattered. It was so hard.
I was going to say, that's a lot of bike to carry underneath you for 120 miles.
And we were honest to God, pace lining. I was with the front group, and there were two guys who I know very well, and we were about 90-some miles into it, and my friend Jake says to my friend Garth, you don't think she can beat us, do you? You don't think she can win? And Garth is like, he's like, yeah, I kind of do. So then, like, Jake launches this massive attack, my buddy Jake, to drop me because he doesn't lose.
Yeah, good friend, right? Real good friend.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, it all is fair in competition.
Yeah.
So I get popped. And thank God, like, another guy with me also gets popped, so I'm not alone. But it ended up, and I kid you not, a sprint finish between the two of those guys at the end of 120. The pictures are phenomenally funny. Because they've got their bar mitts, and they've got all this stuff, and they're gritting it, and they're sprinting on fat bikes.
Oh, my God.
After 120 miles.
That's nuts.
It took
us
7 hours and 17 minutes. That's how fast we were going.
That's pretty quick, really. I mean, I'm actually impressed with that. That's pretty quick.
Oh, my God. It was really fast. But, like, some road races were.
I know. I was going to say, that's a good time on a road bike.
And the temperature started to drop, and I was so shelled. I was, like, just hollow at the end of it. I went into the bathroom. It was heated. And I turned on all the dryers, and I sat on the floor to warm up so I could, like, manage to get my gloves off and get a cup of soup and, like, come back to life.
God.
We do stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, I was going to ask you good war stories, but you've already tagged some already, so that's a great thing.
That's one of the higher ones.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's definitely a good one. So other bikes you may ride, you've also tagged on that a little bit, too, because obviously you ride a fat bike, too. And how do you like...
I do.
How do you like that fat bike?
You know, it's fun. Like, I'm not one of the... There's some people here who ride them all the time, and honestly, I don't really understand that. But I like the variety that the seasons force upon us, if you will. Like, mm-hmm. I like that. I think if I lived in, you know, a place like, you know, San Diego or whatever, where you wake up and it's the same day over and over a day, I think I'd burn out, honestly, because I enjoy the variety and I enjoy having to change my training up. Like, if I could do the same thing every day, day in and day out, I'm not sure I would do well.
You know what you said about
San Diego? I like about having hobbies.
What you said about San Diego is we had a friend that moved there. He was a kinesiology student here at the University of Connecticut, and he moved to San Diego and he's a personal trainer. And he said that the burnout is outrageous out there because there's not an off season. It's not an off season.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
You could just keep like just frying yourself. And you could keep doing the same kind of trainings. Like, I mean, I guess the days get a little shorter, right, or whatever, but it's still, I wouldn't do well. That would not be conducive to me being a good, happy cyclist.
Plus, you don't have those really cool epic stories that you can talk about how, you know, your hands were so cold that you couldn't pry them off the handlebars and, you know, all that good fun stuff.
If I never got hypothermic again, though, hold on, I'll be happy. Like, that is just the worst feeling in the world. Like, when you're shaking so bad that you can't even get into your house.
I hear you. I hear you completely. I
have stopped at the shop a mile away and called my husband and like, I can't do it.
Right.
To come and get me.
Right.
I just can't make it.
Wow. Yeah. I get it. I get it. Cause I get that cold. I get really cold. So I'm always overdressed.
Like it's always wet with me, right? Like mm-hmm. we'll be out somewhere and the weather will start. And then all of a sudden you're like, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like now we're in trouble because now it's raining.
Right.
And it's 38 degrees and we're in trouble. Cause
see, I just wouldn't have been there.
Miles.
I wouldn't have been there. That's it. Yeah. 38 degrees, you're below my limit. That's it. I wimp out right away.
So a
friend of mine years ago used to tell me that he would never go out in weather that was below his age in temperature. And as he got older, he would wait for the really warm days.
I was going to say, that gets more limiting as you go.
That's a little too limiting. Because there's good technical wear you can gear that you can wear now. And, you know, there's ways of keeping yourself warm. Bar mitts, which we had talked about earlier.
Yeah.
Bar mitts definitely make a huge difference. If anyone out there has not discovered those yet, you know, Google it. They rock. They totally rock.
They have really nice boots now. The boots have gotten so much better.
Yeah.
You know, to keep the feet warm. Yeah, there's good gear out there.
Yeah, yeah, it's there. But and it allows you to do one of those epic rides. The years ago I used to ride when there was ice on the road. I don't know why I did that, but I did. Yeah.
Because you are going down. Like, if you hit a patch of ice, you're going to hit the ground, right? Like
quickly. Very, very quickly.
Very quickly. Very, very quickly and forcefully. We've all been there.
All right. So you got a fat bike. You've got a cyclocross bike. Obviously, mountain bikes are your thing. Road bike? Must be a road bike.
And I ride the road. Yeah.
And you ride the road. Do you ride the road a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Ride the road. Because our road riding is so nice. You know, so it's just, I probably do, it depends on the time of year. I mean, I bet if you evened it all out over the course of the year, it's probably an even split. There are times that I'm on my mountain bike almost all the time. There's times that I'm on my road bike almost all the time.
Yeah.
So it might be, you know, 60-40, 50-50 overall over the course of a year, like what kind of bike I'm riding.
Sure. Is your racing season about over now, or are you planning to travel to exotic places to race?
No, I don't have any exotic places coming up, which is okay. I've got some big work projects I'm working on. So I'm just, my last big race was Iron Cross here, which is one of those sort of epic gravel adventure things. Very, very fun. And that was like a 70-mile thing. And then that was my last big push was to that. And now I'm just Fifth Street Cross, which is that night thing that I was talking about. That's the last one is tomorrow. And then our last local cyclocross race is Saturday. So pretty much everything's winding down.
Yeah, it's doing the same thing up here too. And then nationals are right around the corner for cross, so you know.
Yeah, I don't do that. People will be. I would need to reschedule myself to maintain that far into the into the season because I start so early. You know, I start sometimes around February with some of the fat biking stuff. So by November, I'm done. Like, if I was going to do that, I would need to like rejigger things. So I was still raring to go, you know, come national time.
Right. Well, you need a break. At some point, you need a break.
You need a break.
You really
do.
Your
body demands one, and you naturally take one. You know, like, and you know when you need it. Like, if you just start feeling like, time for a break.
Yeah, yeah. I know that work thing is looming over you right now, and we will cut this off in a little bit here as per your request. But I got a couple other questions for you. We had put something out a while ago on another show, and it was all about booty, you know, road booty, what the things you find, the pirates find out on the road. And have you ever found anything really cool or interesting when you've been out riding your bike?
Yeah, I saw that question, and I thought, and I have to say, I have a friend who's pro class at it. Like, he has come home with whole tea. I'm not kidding. Like, he has come home with like whole tea sets. Like, look at these teacups that I found. I'm like, what are you talking about? He carries a bag from them just to bring home his booty. I have found nothing more excited than a little Beanie Baby last year.
Like, really?
And I did. I grabbed it. It was a little. It was a bumblebee, and I brought it home. And,
that's nice.
Oh, I would have loved that.
Oh, yeah. Fran would have grabbed that. You know, because Franny's the queen bee. She's the queen bee, so she would really like that. That'd be a good thing. That's really funny. Yeah, it's everybody's got a story. You know, my biggest find was a 12-inch adjustable wrench, which was difficult to carry back, but I grabbed it.
I think men are more keen to seeing the tools on the road. Like, I know that this guy, too, also, like, has found all kinds. I think that I might see those things and not even register them as prizes, you know? But, I might just be like, oh, look at that. There's a thing on the road. I wonder why that thing is there. I pass by a lot of things, and I wonder, like, how did that get there?
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to ask you one more question here, and then I'll let you go. And it's pertaining to, you know, what you're best at with the with your fitness and all. Core. I noticed that I got a little blurb here from bicycling.com about the four best exercises to do as a cyclist.
Recent one. Yeah.
Recent one. Yeah, it just came in, and you seem to have a thing about about the core. And can you touch base on that a little bit for us?
I have a thing about the core. Yeah, you know, I think that I do harp on it quite a bit, because cycling, to do it well and to be comfortable and strong and all those things, to have stamina, you really do need a strong core. And by core, I'm talking from your shoulders to your glutes, right? Like that, everything but your limbs need to be strong, because that is your personal frame. That's what supports you on your bike. And there's all kinds of good, they've done many good studies that when people's cores start to fatigue, their pedal mechanics fall apart, because that's what you're pushing actually against your core in some ways when you're pedaling.
Right.
You're holding yourself stable and you're pushing against it. So
sure.
when that gets tired, your legs start to sway a little bit. That's when knee problems come in. People get hip problems. Your back hurts. You're not transferring power as well. Like when you're pulling on your bars to get power into your feet, you're not, like, all that kind of breaks down. And it doesn't take that much. Like people make everything harder than it needs to be. But like just a couple of days of doing some core exercise will transform your ride. I mean, it will really help eliminate a lot of aches and pains all over just to have a strong core. And that's what supports you in everything you do. Your posture will be better. Cyclists can have really bad posture because we sit all day and then we sit on our bikes and we hunch forward. You know, so it's nice to like counteract that a bit with a strong core. So I am very much about, like, and people get bored. I get that. That's why I write so many articles with so many different core things. Like, you don't like that? Try this. You don't like that? Try it. There's a million different ways up the mountain. Just keep doing something, you know, to work those muscles and keep your core strong, because it's important for what you love to do and everything else that you do.
Sure.
I do core twice a week, and I think most of the exercises I do, you taught me.
Yeah. Yeah. Fran is a big fan.
Yes. That weird thing I do when I'm prone on the exercise ball and I lift my legs in the back, that's hers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You posted that. Yeah.
That weird thing I do.
Yeah. And the oval, one of the things I do, it's oval crunches, where you lie on the exercise ball and you make your back go in an oval instead of a straight up and down crunch. I do that.
Yep.
That's yours.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
twice a week.
There's a trainer up at our gym where I teach spinning, and he said if you can only find one thing to do for your core, he said do burpees. He just loves burpees because they're
is in my little order.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. So
because it hits everything. It
yes.
all those targets we were saying about. It checks all those boxes of high intensity. It's, you know, it's working your core. It's working your upper body, which a lot of cyclists don't. It gets you snappy, fast twitch fiber muscles.
Yep.
It works your central nervous system. I mean, it is kind of the ultimate exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. Well, Celine, this has been awesome. This has been really, really nice.
Thank you.
Our
yeah,
guest,
it's been really fun.
Yeah. Our guest today has been Celine Yeager, and Celine is a top-selling author and professional health and fitness writer, and she lives in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania. She is Bicycling Magazine's Fit Chick, and she has lots of really cool stories here that she's told us here today and lots of great information. If you need to know more about Celine, she does have a web page. And would you like to tell us what that is?
It's just CelineYeager.com.
CelineYeager.com.
You can find all my channels through that.
So yep. You can check her out there. And you can also, if you are connected with Bicycling Magazine, you'll also get lots of great advice from her at Bicycling Magazine. So it has been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I hope we'll have you back sometime soon. And
excellent.
You know, have a wonderful day, and keep your rubber side down, the wind at your back. Okay.
And have a wonderful holiday season.
And a wonderful holiday.
And season. I hope we get to ride with you someday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. I will look you up next time I'm heading into the New England area.
Oh, please.
Absolutely. Please
yes.
do. We'd love to have you. All right. Great. So I'm going to move on here and
take care,
maybe
Celine.
Pick a few other things
Thank
here
you.
To talk about. And we've got a number of things on my list. Oh, more road booty. Yes, I had someone who has, he has responded to, this would be Steve, and he said he found a shiny object in the headlight during a morning commute last week in Mystic. And, oh, the irony, he looks down and he finds there's a nice little wrench that he found on the side of the road, a 15-millimeter wrench. So I got a few people that commented back and said, well, that 15-millimeter, you know, you could use that on your bicycle. I think that's a good size for it. So he can also use it to fix his car. But, you know, it's just a thing. You definitely find some cool stuff. Tools seem to be very common as far as road booty goes. If anybody else has anything that they have found a road booty, just respond to the Facebook page, please. And we will broadcast it on the air because we're always, I mean, we've had some very interesting items pop up in the process here. So responding to road booty, that's kind of a neat thing. We've got a few things that are coming up that I wanted to talk about. One is that there is a, this is under upcoming events, and the Department of Transportation is holding a public informational session at 7 p.m. on December 6th. That's tonight, 2017, at the Bolton Town Hall. That would be at 222 Bolton Center, Bolton, Connecticut. This is from our friend Sylvia, who has been very instrumental on getting the information out and letting people know exactly what they're trying to do. What they're trying to do is bring a passage into the Hop River Trail from Bolton. So the construction of a multi-use bike trail on the northern side of Route 6 and 44, beginning west of 6 and 44, split and continue east to Quarry Road, the Hop River Trail to Bolton Notch Plaza. So it's a realignment of Route 6 in the eastbound direction as it curves from Route 44. The project is proposed to remove the compound curve and replace it with a single curve to potentially alleviate crashes in that vicinity. So anyway, the relocation of Notch Road further to the west will to increase the sight lines and decrease the crossing distance for vehicles turning onto Route 44. So it's a fairly big project, but it has a lot of benefits to bicycles. So we really want you to be aware of this. And actually, that's something that we want to maybe take a look at, check it out. It will be at the Bolton Town Hall, 222 Bolton Center Road in Bolton, Connecticut, this evening. So please stop by 7 p.m. And the more people that we have that love bicycles, the more we get attention to the fact that this is something that we really need. And we do really need it because it's a very dangerous area. And now that they've really done a great job in increasing the Charter Oak Trail, which is coming into Bolton Notch right now from all the way from Hartford, it's going to connect everything. And that's a big deal because now the one artery of bicycle traffic that you can get that will bring you into the city of Hartford is coming from the east. Nothing from the south yet, nothing from the north yet, nothing from the west. But from the east, you definitely can get into Hartford without fighting with the cars and trucks. So this is a big deal, and it's just going to be a cool thing. My friend John is so excited because when they finish this other little connection piece, he can ride almost to the doorstep of his work from where he lives in Mansfield. So cool thing, very cool thing. So please check that out. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is on Monday, December 11th at 6:45 p.m., the town of Mansfield will be receiving the Bicycle Friendly Community Award, and there's going to be a brief ceremony to it at the town council meeting, and that's December 11th, 6:45 p.m. Karen Jenkins from the League's Board of Directors and is most recently its chairperson will make the presentation. And there's going to be a bunch of us from the bicycle community that will be there. Please join us if you can. And we're going to meet in the town hall's council chambers around 6:30 p.m. prior to the presentation. The council meeting starts at 7 and we'll be out of the way by then. So you definitely want to, if you want to be a part of this really, really historic thing, I would encourage you to show up, and I will be bopping over there shortly after finishing a fitness class that I'm teaching over at the Mansfield Community Center. So anyway, you want to also take a look at, because December 17th, Elm City Cyclocross. It is the final race in the Connecticut Series of Cross. You can go to ctseriesofcx.com and you can find out a little bit more about that. It will be the final of the series, and I am going to be speaking with the promoter about that this week, and we'll talk a little bit more because I think he has a little ceremony afterwards, because we're wrapping up all of the different races that have happened throughout the fall here in Connecticut for the Connecticut Series of Cross. It was a very, very successful season. Lots of participation in a lot of the races, a couple of new races, which were well-received, definitely a cool thing. So Connecticut continues to be a serious influence in cyclocross in the United States, as it was where we had our national championships here back in January. Yes, January, right here. Speaking of Cross Nationals this year are going to be in Reno, Nevada. That's January 9th through the 14th in 2018, and it's going to be a similar format to what was used as far as Hartford goes. So you can go online on that. You can go to USA Cycling and find out more information about it. But the Cross Nationals this year are in Reno, Nevada. So that makes an interesting new place to have the Cross Nationals that does rotate around the United States. I would think that Reno is probably going to have a little more snow than we had, although we did have snow. So anything could happen in Reno because it is in a place where there is snow. So it could be a very interesting Nationals this year. I know there's a few people that are very excited about it because of the fact that if it produces a New England winter-esque type of atmosphere, then anybody that's from out here and is going out there will have, well, I'm not going to say they have an advantage, but they'll have a familiarity to the actual conditions that are thrown in front of you. And let me tell you, this year's Nationals in Hartford in January, every condition you could possibly imagine was thrown in front of you. So it's kind of a cool thing. Cross is a cool thing. We like that. We got to talk to Celine about that a little bit. That was fun, too. So we spoke last week a little bit about dating cyclists and whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, and I had Fran involved in that, but I found a few other different things here too, six questions that you're afraid to ask, and certain things like, you know, do I wear underwear underneath my cycling shorts? That's always a good question, and the answer is always no. You don't want to go there. And so there are embarrassing questions that some people are fairly afraid to ask, but you really want to be sitting directly on that Lycra short. I'll actually do a special on Lycra shorts and why we wear them and what that's all about. But this is another uncomfortable question, and I'll get this Fran involved on this because it's more pointed towards women than it is towards men. And so it's about heart rate monitor straps. So it's fairly simple. When men wear heart rate monitor strap, it's pretty easy to position your heart rate monitor strap straight forward across the chest. For women, the answer may not be so obvious. There's women that have spent a long time wearing their heart rate monitor wrong or incorrectly because maybe, you know, their boyfriend or their dad said, well, you got to put it right here because that's where it goes. And obviously it has to be in a specific place. So I am going to, for the record, the heart rate monitor should go underneath your breasts. And Fran, can you give me some information on that, please?
Yeah, that's what I do.
That's what you do.
Right.
That's
so
it.
So take your heart rate monitor. I have a kind that the measuring unit, reader, the unit that reads, it snaps onto the heart rate monitor and it can be unsnapped and it lives separately from the heart rate monitor.
On the strap,
detachable.
On the strap itself.
It detaches
right.
from the strap.
Right.
The transmitter, thank you,
right.
detaches from the strap.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I let my heart rate monitor live when it's resting. It's off the strap because I'm just not sure if it's going to draw current if it's
mm-hmm.
attached. So I keep it separate. So what I do is I take the actual strap without the transmitter attached, and I run it under warm water, and I need to do warm water because if you do it any less than warm, it's going to be cold when it goes on your body.
It's
and woohoo,
a little too exciting to put on.
And I prefer to use some electrolyte paste. And there's a number of brands you can get. You can get electrolyte paste that you just use for diagnostic ultrasounds, and you can also get mm-hmm. specific products like Babump that work for that. And there are a number of products. And I put that on the electrode pads on the heart rate monitor, and then I attach one side of the transmitter and I put it around myself, and my understanding is that my transmitter is supposed to go right between my breasts. I don't know if that I think that's right because the electrodes are on either side of it, so those have to be underneath your breast because they're going to read your heart the best.
I think the key points are to the sides
yes.
of where the actual monitor, the transmitter
yes.
snaps on.
Right.
And so that and that's spread wide across your chest.
So the transmitter is actually sitting right over the bottom of my sternum
mm-hmm.
and then the two electrodes are sitting right snugly underneath my breasts, underneath my sport bra. And sometimes, depending on the sport bra, the different sport bras are different from each other. It might stick out a little bit underneath the sport bra, which is fine. But it should be snug. If it's starting to get loose, it'll get loose over time because it stretches out. So you have to use the little loops inside to tighten it. To tighten the straps. You have
mm-hmm.
to make sure you do that every so often,
mm-hmm.
And because you want it to fit snugly, so you get a good contact. But you do have. You want to make sure you wet it down, and it's usually a good idea to use some kind of electrolyte paste. I mean, once you get sweating, that'll take over. But to start out, to get a good read, you want to do those things.
There
and then, and when you take it off, you absolutely want to rinse the heart rate monitor, rinse the sweat off, and store it having been rinsed.
Right, right. Absolutely. Well, that's great advice, Fran. We really appreciate that. So there are six questions that you're afraid to ask, and they are in Bicycling Magazine. If you go look it up, you can find out more, including some of the other questions, which we may get to at another episode. Simple things like how should my saddle feel, and what about the hair situation, you know, down there. And how to apply chamois cream. Yeah, Fran's just like throwing her hands in the air here on me. How do we apply chamois cream, which Fran has a very intricate, thank you, method of how to do that sort of thing. Should you pop your saddle sore? Ooh, don't want to go
also,
there.
When does Hanukkah start?
And then when does Hanukkah, yes. And right on down to the final question that everyone needs to know, can I orgasm on the bike?
Oh, my God.
So we will save those for yet another time, and we will find we will discuss.
Really?
Yeah, really. It's in Bicycling Magazine. You know, I didn't make this stuff up. It's right there.
Okay.
So ends another episode of Bicycle Talk, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. You can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you would like to contribute to or be on the show as a guest, please contact me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS. Stores.